It's an Arsenal Thing podcast. Football's in our DNA.
Hello and welcome to It's an Arsenal Thing. I'm your host Tom, and by my side is a man who once joined a protest just because he got a free t-shirt. He's also lobbied Parliament to make it illegal to put pineapple and anchovies on a pizza. It can only be Silent Dave Hutchinson. The podcast is presented by Manscaped, the best in below-the-waist grooming. We have an offer for you on the Performance Package 4.0 Luxury Grooming Kit. That's a little bit later in the show. What a week! The Pope got sent off. No, not that one, but his relation, Nick. Chelsea under the West London boy wizard Graham Potter got beat by managerless Southampton. And Arsenal got yet another fine for probably having a groundsman who owns a cat. Neymar was genuinely injured. No, genuinely. All the usual rolling around, of course, but a real injury on an injured limb that genuinely belongs to him. I know a man who knows a man whose aunt was at the stadium, and she said it was almost definitely an injury.
In off the back of my head!
Shh! On the menu tonight, we cover the kamikaze defensive display against Manchester City at the Emirates and the nail-biting thriller at the Villa against Unai Emery's men. I'm in the gun room with Jay Lauren and presenter of AFTV, Cecil J. Thomas. We ask, who was the most feared goalkeeper in the history of football? And look back at two Arsenal players who scored a hat-trick each in a game back in 2003.
It's an Arsenal thing, it's an Arsenal thing. Believe it or not, it's an Arsenal thing. With football and transfers, you know who you'll bring. You're listening to It's an Arsenal Thing.
So, did you hear about the pitchside rumpus between the analysts of both Arsenal and Aston Villa at Villa Park? There they were, throwing vicious data at each other, baffling each other with stats, and there were pie charts everywhere. It must have been like getting beaten with a wet Weatherspoon's menu. No doubt the FA will charge us for the threatening and reckless use of a clipboard. Tom Hanks was there. Who knows how and why he thought supporting Villa was a good idea, but as soon as Jorginho scored, he was heard expressing his concerns.
Houston, we have a problem.
Not to be outdone by Brentford's Water and Steam Museum, not too far away from Villa Park, you can find the Pen Museum. Making steel pen nibs in Birmingham during the Victorian era was a major industry with 129 companies employing 8,000 workers, mainly women in brackets. By visiting the Pen Museum, you'll discover a wide range of fascinating objects, presumably pens, and details that help tell the story of Birmingham's pen trade. Oh, you can't wait, can you? Order your tickets, book the hotel. There are a range of activities for people of all ages to enjoy, including writing with a quill and ink, using typewriters. Well, they're not very pen-like, are they? Plus an exciting opportunity to make your own nib using the same machinery once operated by women workers in the 19th century. From the archives, from 1935-36 season, first division match between Aston Villa and Arsenal at Villa Park took place on the 14th of December 1935. Arsenal won the fixture 7-1 with all of their seven goals scored by striker Ted Drake. A record haul for the top flight fixture and a record for any division at the time. The top flight record still stands today. On the 13th of September 1975, 17-year-old David O'Leary was in action at Villa Park, Aston Villa versus Arsenal. Prior to the match, after winning three consecutive Premier League games against Arsenal from July 2020 to February 2021, Aston Villa have now lost each of their last three games against the Gunners. Only against West Ham have Arsenal won more Premier League away games than they have against Aston Villa, though they have lost two of their last three visits to Villa Park. Aston Villa lost 4-2 against Leicester in their last home league game, but haven't lost consecutive matches at Villa Park since April last year. However, one of those defeats back then came against Arsenal. Arsenal have lost their last two away games in all competitions, as many as they had in their first 14 on the road this term. They lost three on the bounce away from home in December 2021, while they've not lost three in a row without scoring since December 2009. Aston Villa have lost their last two Premier League games, as many as they had in their previous nine. They've shipped seven goals across these two defeats, as many as they have in their previous seven Premier League games combined.
It's time to enter the gunroom for a natter.
Hi, welcome to the gunroom. We got a full house. It was just me and Lauren last week. I mean, you know, it's like a Valentine's date, but with our partners in the background, wasn't it, Lauren?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Nothing fancy, but we got there in the end. Jay's back from a skiing trip, romantic skiing. Can't even say it properly. How are you, Jay?
Yeah, very good, thanks. Very good.
Did you have a little table set with the old checkered cloth out in the snow? No.
No.
Two tins of John Smith's, was it, in a prawn sandwich?
Somewhere in between. But it was good fun.
Excellent. We've got CJ, how are you, from AFTV. You may recognise the face. We will talk to him about what he's been up to, how he got to where he is. And we've also got Lauren in Barcelona. How are you?
I'm doing good, thank you.
Fantastic. Well, we're going to start with you, CJ, because you've been a busy boy, haven't you? I mean, we were digging around trying to find stuff out about you. You played football for Crawley and Forest. I think there's another club as well, wasn't there?
Yeah, I was at Crystal Palace at 15 for a while.
And you enrolled in dancing and modelling. And obviously now you're a presenter. Yeah. You must have to wake up in the morning and pinch yourself, mustn't you? I mean, you've squeezed a lot in. It's disgustingly ambitious and disturbingly talented you are.
Definitely. I mean, I'll take it. I'll take that compliment.
Have it, yeah.
Very much.
For a change.
It's yeah, I've had some experiences on the journey that I just think how and wow and how are we here, how have I blagged this, as some would say. But it's been an incredible journey. Obviously still quite young and hopefully got further to go, but you know, as a young boy I want to be a professional footballer through my love of Thierry Henry. I see in the background, that's one of my favorite moments of him scoring against Leeds and celebrating. What a great background that is, by the way. One of my favorite moments. But I want to be a professional footballer. As most young boys' dreams is to be that. I got there and it wasn't what I expected, and I hated pretty much every day of being a professional footballer through the experience I had, which is documented on a documentary I'm sure we'll speak about later. But then I left there and was a shadow of who I am today, and got told like I won't ever amount to anything bigger than where I was as a signed footballer. And I wanted to prove that wrong and just do things that I enjoy in life. And supporting Arsenal has been my passion from the beginning. And I went through a lot of other avenues before that, performing, modelling, dancing. I'm in a film that releases in May, a feature film, and there's a lot of things I wanted to
sort of like the Ashley Banjo with football boots, aren't you, really?
Exactly that. It's not Ashley Banjo with football boots. Some people call me Troy Bolton from a High School Musical, and I live a double life, and I had to live a double life for a lot of it. There was a lot of I got ridiculed quite a bit for wanting to be a dancer after leaving football, but now I get to do amazing things. I body double for some of the top athletes. Obviously, I did it with Aubameyang. I've done it. I'm Rashford's main body double. I work with Ollie Watkins, which I quite regularly now. So I got to see him after the game on the weekend. And
I'm Luke Shaw's body double. That's me. That's where I'm
at. You're off the
way. Let's talk about that documentary, CJ, Chasing the Dream, because it's, as I said before we came on, it's very important to us because we've been digging around in the background about young professional footballers, the ones that don't make it, the expectations of parents, the hype as well in the media. We've been in touch with Beyond the White Line with James Shiffy and Daniela Usu, who's a sports psychotherapist. Very important for us. How did you get involved in that? Was it through AFTV again?
No, it wasn't through AFTV at all. Well, actually saying that, they filmed that. So we're going to get on to how I ended up at AFTV, but they filmed the documentary. So AFTV initially, their production company was actually UFF at the time. Oh, I'm a football fan. They filmed the documentary at the time, and that kind of was my introduction into AFTV. I obviously knew of the channel, but that was my introduction into them putting my content on there. But yeah, the documentary was something that I live by. It's something that I'm quite proud of. It was at the time where I was trained as a performer, but I also, you speak about, you know, psychotherapy between football. My brother's a psychotherapist for footballers, and I have a company called Talent Transfer where I mentor young professional footballers. Every week I'm at a different club. Some people see that, and if they know me, they'll see on my Instagram, I'm at a different club doing workshops with the scholarship boys, because that's the biggest group of players that have a high dropout rate. It's 0.012% make it, 180 out of 1.5 million to the Premier League. So I'm very much in that. This is my field, and I have a sense of responsibility for young players that want to be footballers. That there's transfer. I teach them about transferable skills into the real world. I talk to them about their chances of actually making it and the best way for them to make it, and also advice on how I was treated as a footballer and how to avoid that. So but chasing the dream, it started. I'll give you the kind of the backstory of it. And it's kind of my route into AFTV as well, into the job. When I left professional football, I was just trained as a dancer. I then signed up for Cheeky Sport FC. So Joel Bayer runs that. He had like a little YouTube football team. It was around the time it first, when YouTube football started blowing up, and I joined that team. We played AFTV FC. They had a YouTube football team at the time. Cheeky Sport shut down because we weren't as serious. And then the guys at AFTV messaged me and said, "Oh, would you ever want to come down and train for us?" Trained for their AFTV FC team. They realised that I was quite good. I don't want to toot my horn too much, but I've come from professional football, so I was quite a good player at the time. And they said, "Oh, where did you play?" And I said, "At Crawley Town." And then they were doing basically a special on players that have left the game, that got released, and how they deal with it mentally. So they said, "Oh, can we just interview you and just get your story?" So I said, "Cool." So they interviewed me, and then they realised the story had a bit more legs than they first assumed, and it was quite serious, and I went through quite a bit. And then they were like, "Can we do more? Can we do more? Can we do more?" And then that led to me, and I think Jordan on there, having the full documentary instead of going to other release players. They kind of just used us two, hopefully people take from the documentary, you know, the other side of it. Obviously, it is hard leaving the professional game. It's a lot of people's dream, but there's more to people's stories. There's so many kids that are so lost, but they end up being such a success after being leaving a professional football setup. So yeah, quite a long answer. Apologies, but that was
changed. No, excellent. As I say, it's a bit of a passion with the podcast because we have done various things. If you saw me, I don't know, 1 minute I was going like,
"Yeah, you're tearing up,"
and then I was stuck. It's all on purpose, obviously. That's the sort of broadcast we make. It's no AFTV here. It's not as slick, is it, really? Dave was digging around. It's fascinating what we can dig up on you, isn't it? We actually found out that your shoe size is 8 and 9 in the UK. We've got everything that you do is online. So we've even got your shoe size, mate. We don't know your deodorant, but Dave's still working on it. Let's talk about AFTV, because it really does split the Arsenal fan base, but it is a fascinating subject. It's 1.2 billion channel views, over 5 million followers. It's astounding. I think what happened in the past was the coverage that you used to have was very reactive. Yeah. It was after the games. They've since gone into watch-alongs, and I do catch up with it every now and again, and it has vastly improved. But I think the palate is soured with some Arsenal fans because what it used to be. Yeah. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I can agree with that. I mean, it's definitely changing. I'll be completely honest. Look, I came in and there was things I didn't like about the channel, if I'm completely honest, but it was something that I got brought into, and I made it kind of my thing was always, I want to hear from as many fans as possible, but also change the narrative on AFTV. I always want to bring, this is in general day-to-day life, I want to bring football and fans closer. I've always wanted that. I feel like that should be the main goal for most people. And I've been on both sides. I've been a professional footballer and I've seen the views some players, you know, think of fans. I'm a fan, so I've seen that side as well. And I've always wanted to bring it closer. So when I came to AFTV, I wanted to kind of bring the club closer if I could, which I've been trying to do, and also bring the players closer and the people that are around the club. So, yeah, but there was times because of the history. There was times where, I've been in some situations that one day I wish I could. I hope I can speak about. I have video. It got very dangerous for me, but I believe in being good and being positive and leading in the right way, and that's the person I am. And I feel like I always see the good in people, so I feel bad about the channels. That's what I wanted to bring there. And I feel like it has changed a lot. I mean, I brought massive guests onto AFTV, the likes of David Dean. I brought Edu on. I speak.
Oh, we'll guys. Have his number off you after.
David Dean, he's a legend. He is obviously, many people know him, but yeah, really down to earth guy. Same with like Edu as well. We speak. And I want that. I want that for the fans. I want to be able to. There's my dream is to be able to go to the CAF, like the little Wonder Tree out opposite Emirates, and bring in like an Edu to sit down with fans and be open and have like and film it. And that's what it needs to get to. I understand is you always got to keep sometimes keep fans arms length because you don't know what they're gonna say. But I love what Arteta has done for Arsenal, and I feel like we can still go a step further and bring in, you know, the relationship and the fans closer to the team. But yeah, it does split opinions, but I really hope that is changing now. I think that there's been a massive change in the 2 years I've been there. And of course, fans are fans, and you never know what they can say. And there's always going to be a time when they might come on and say something outrageous. But for what you see as a whole and the people that actually work there full time, there is a lot. We do analysis, we do previews, reviews, there's more to it than just reactionary stuff, which I know birthed AFTV, but we are trying to go into a different direction and be a broadcaster, shall we say.
Yeah, so, yeah. I think it was kind of forming caricatures at one stage, and that's what some fans got annoyed about. So it's changed direction anyway. I just want to pay our respects to Christian Atsu, who was killed in a recent earthquake in Turkey. He set up a charity for abandoned and orphaned and trafficked children. He donated thousands of pounds to help destitute prisoners in Ghana pay for their life-saving operations with little or no publicity. An excellent footballer and an excellent person as well. He will be greatly missed. Right then, Manchester City, first game up. Let's look at that lineup. It was 4-3-3. It was Ramsdale, Tomiyasu, Saliba, Gabriel, Zinchenko, Martin Odegaard, Jorginho. The much maligned Jorginho, but we'll butter up his calls in a bit. Granit Xhaka, Bukayo Saka, Eddie Nketiah, Gabriel Martinelli. Lauren, what did you think of the performance? We'll get to the nitty gritty in a bit. Just a general wrap up.
I mean, the first half was good. The second half I was a bit numb to. It was a tough one to watch. I will be completely honest. After the third goal, I had to take a minute to myself just to kind of calm down. I felt the world was falling down around me, but then I said, okay, come on, it's not the end of the world. But even then, you know, at the end of the day, it was a tough watch, but there was a lot of positives that we could take, you know, in hindsight. So
Jay, it was about the high press again. They beat us to every second ball, didn't they? They really kept us pinned back, and it was hard to get sort of going. It was very physical City as well, I felt. How did you view it?
Yeah, it feels like it was ages ago. It feels like it was weeks ago. They did well, but like, we missed chances. Like, we, you know, Eddie missed him, the first header especially, you know, kind of waiting for the ball to hit the back of the net. And I mean, they're still a class act, aren't they, City? You know, you can't give them opportunities. You can't give them gifts. They don't need them. And that's exactly what we did. De Bruyne is a class act, isn't he? You can't give him a free gift like that. So I thought obviously losing Partey was massive. Like when it was revealed earlier in the day that he wasn't going to make the team, you know, that there was that gasp, wasn't there, where we were all like, oh, you know. And I thought Jorginho did all right, to be honest, for his first start. But he's not Thomas Partey, especially from a physical sense, you know. And against them, we need that in there. But I thought we did okay. You know, I don't think anybody really needed reminding just how good City still are, and they're not going to go away anywhere. But I thought we did okay. On another day, you know, maybe Eddie puts that header in, and it's a different game. But disappointing. But you know, as it turned out, after the Villa game and what happened with them lot at Forest, we kind of not got away with it, because obviously there's going to be twists and turns as the season goes on, but maybe wasn't as fatal as we all thought when that final whistle was blown.
CJ, it was a clumsy defensive performance, wasn't it, in many, many ways. I mean, we were undone by ourselves, weren't we? The De Bruyne opener with Tomiyasu. You would never expect Tomiyasu to sort of play that ball backwards, would you?
No, not at all. I think that's what it is. I think we gave them gifts and they take it. And you can't give gifts to anyone in the Premier League, if I'm completely honest, but especially Man City. They were ready. They were sharp. And I had a lot of hope going into the game, because I was at the FA Cup game. No, it was the FA Cup game. Yeah, I was there. And I was just like, 1-0 at the Etihad, and if I'm honest, we bossed that game. So when I was like, when it comes to the Emirates, I was like, we got their number. But it wasn't that, and I've, you know, that was naivety of me. But we gave them gifts, and it was painful at times. Zinchenko dribbling into the midfield and losing it, which I actually saw a lot at Everton, not Everton, so I saw a lot of Villa as well. But love Zinchenko this season. It's just we got caught out quite a bit. And yeah, it was a hard one to take. It was really was a hard one to take. And everyone online, other fans, Lord have mercy. They were waiting. I think they had, I don't know what it was. It must have been as soon as they went 2-1 up, their fingers were just, every person in the world who was an Arsenal fan was ready to play. My phone went crazy. I was like, oh, I see. Even United fans annoyed me. I'm like, this is your biggest rival. And yeah. It's embarrassing. So, listen, for that whole context, I hope Arsenal don't do it anyway. But that was one thing that really also annoyed me as well, because there's an opportunity where, you know, we could have went could have made the gap a lot bigger than it is on City. Mm-hmm. But here's what it is. This is football. This is the Premier League. There's still games left. Still a long way to go. I believe the boys can do it. But yeah, it was a painful one to watch. Just we had chances missed, and we get, like I said at the beginning, we gave them gifts. We gifted them a lot of goals.
Mm-hmm. Tactically, Lauren, they were tight though, weren't they? They did their homework so well. They squeezed us, they pushed us, we had no time on the ball, and that's where these mistakes came from, wasn't it?
Absolutely. One thing I did find really, you know, unusual, obviously City have that issue with their left back now with Cancelo after going. I thought it was very strange the way that Pep started the game, and I think had we have capitalized very early on, we would have maybe come away with the draw at least, because there was so much space on the wings. You know, Saka was running into great spaces there. He had Silva for the taking. It was really, really promising to watch. But as soon as they reverted back to a more standard 4-3-3, they had us from then on in. They were able to put the pressure on. But I thought it was really interesting, you know, because we've seen so many times before that teams like Newcastle, they come out, they have players doubling up on Saka on the wing and Martinelli as well. They keep us really, really narrow. And that's how, to this point, teams had beaten us or had taken points from us. So to see Pep kind of, you know, try to challenge that in a different way, to give the space out wide, I thought it was an interesting and kind of a weird, I had a bit of hope there. I thought maybe he'd overthought it, but obviously, you know, we can't, as Jay said, we cannot discredit the quality within the City team. Like they can pull it out. And I think, like CJ said, I think a lot of us kind of went into that game, players included, a little bit too confident, perhaps, especially after that result at the Etihad. So, you know, there was positives as well. Like I said, I don't want to be too down about it. Obviously, it's easier to say with the Villa results.
Well, we've still got the Villa game, so
exactly.
we get over our depression as we go.
Absolutely, no, but it was a tough game, and they were able to take their chances, and we weren't. That was the main thing.
We're going to talk a lot about goalkeepers today. One of the points I want you to bring up was I had an email saying about, does anyone else feel that Aaron Ramsdale's distribution isn't at the same level this season? Which is an interesting point, because he used to be like, I'm not agreeing. Don't shoot the messenger.
Come up in your shoes. I get it all the time. I ask the question.
But it's an interesting point, because sometimes last season, I mean, his delivery in, you know, up the field was brilliant, down the wings, spot on. He was almost like another fullback with his passing, like a Ben White. And he's not quite like that at the moment. Who wants to pick up on that? Jay?
Why did you have to come to me?
anyone else? I'll reel you in.
I'll be honest. I haven't massively noticed the drop in his distribution, if I'm honest, just quickly thinking. I think ultimately, playing out from the back, the quality as a team has still been really good. The level of, you know, your one-touch passing that starts with Ramsdale and progressing the ball forward, even at the City game, was still really good. You know, the level, if you watch it back, we still put together some lovely passages, but I haven't noticed a massive drop off in Ramsdale's distribution. Not that I can think of anyway, not unless I'm missing something.
We've also had messages about passing out from the back. Now, if you are set against certain teams, you pass out well from the back. But against that City side, they were so far up your own tailpipe,
you couldn't really get out.
Mm. Yes. I was going to say about Ramsdale. Like, I don't think it's dropped off too much. I've seen players in the midfield misplace passes way more than Ramsdale's distribution. So I have no qualms with Ramsdale. It might have dropped off a little bit, but there's been a lot of sloppy play in that midfield where players have been misplacing passes. So my kind of aggravation goes towards there. When it comes to playing at the back, I know Arteta is stubborn in the sense that he will not want to change it up. So it can be risky playing to Man City, but I don't believe he's a man that will be like, change the way we play. I actually saw City change the way they play. They went long quite a bit against us to Haaland quite a bit instead of playing out from the back. And maybe we might have fell for that trap because you can say that it may not have worked. But for me, I don't see Arteta changing that style of play from coming out from the back. And I actually enjoy it. I was in the stands and they were playing out from the back. And I was like, I want it to go faster, but I like seeing that build-up play, even if it can sometimes not be the way we want to see and not pull off. But yeah,
absolutely. Right, talking about goalkeepers, 36 minutes. Edison is booked for time wasting. Then in the 39th minute, he body checks Nketiah. No attempt at the ball. Absolutely blazing, wasn't it? It was lucky not to get a red card, Jay, surely.
I'm trying to think now. What was it? He like sort of body checked him.
Yeah, he proper went up and just
Petty was in midair, wasn't he?
Penalty, wasn't it?
Yeah, I suppose maybe. Yeah, I suppose we've seen you know yellows given for less than that. So yeah, I suppose he got off a bit lightly.
Is it time that we clamp down on keepers, Lauren? Because we get to the Villa game, but Martinez, another bluffer and a shithouser, isn't he? 9 minutes he wasted in that game. Not that I was counted, but 9 minutes. All this skullduggery of putting people off their penalties, and Martinez is one of these guys. Is it time we have a look at all this?
Time wasting for sure. I think there was a stat the other day I saw, I think, 3 out of our last 4 games, the opponent keeper has been booked for time wasting, which is crazy when you think about it. But I think it also goes to show you that, you know, we rely so heavily on the flow of the game. We like to be in control of it. And, you know, we're so good at doing that, that other teams are often resorted to wasting as much time to break up our flow, to kind of hinder us in that sense. But absolutely, I mean, obviously we're going to talk about it, you know, karma comes, karma's a bitch, but, you know, it was really frustrating in some of the games recently. Is the one that I think back to was the Newcastle game in particular. It was a joke how long they were taking on the ball, and you know, it's becoming a common thread here, and we're seeing it now that a little bit of action's being taken. But I mean, no one's ever going to get sent off for wasting time. Like, please tell me, is anyone ever going to get sent off? Show them a yellow card, they're going to continue to do it. So something else has to be done, you know.
Well, it's not quite as bad as old De Gea, is it? I mean, you know, come on. We're looking back at that one. That is pantomime season, obviously. 57 minutes, Haaland showed his physical attributes throughout the game. He got involved in a bit of a grabbing session with Gabriel and a penalty was given. Luckily, he was offside. And then 72 minutes, Grealish scores from a poor pass from Gabriel. Deflection as well. I mean, that's the one that really soured it, wasn't it? Deflection from Tomiyasu. Poor Tomiyasu. What's he done to deserve this? What did you make of that goal? He's hitting some form, isn't he, for Man City now, Grealish?
Yeah, do you know what he is? He really is. And for that price tag, it's about time, I'll be honest, because it was looking like it was going to be a flop. But yeah, I think a lot of City fans I speak to, and they are happy with Jack Grealish. And you're right, I think he is finding form. He's very good at picking up fouls as well, slowing the game down. But that is one of his attributes, is beating a player or picking up a foul. I see Saka do it quite a bit now as well, actually. But it's just annoying it happened against us. It feels like teams or players find their form or find their feet against Arsenal. It is so frustrating. But yeah, Jack Grealish really is starting to fine tune for Man City.
Haaland scores 82nd minute. That really just soured the whole proceedings, wasn't it? I think I could have handled 1-0, 2-0, but 3-0, I thought was just 3-1 rather, was a bit much, really. It wasn't the result that we deserved because we put a lot of effort in. And I felt at times we were on par with them. Jay, what did you make of the overall players rating? Saka got 4, which was understandable. And Eddie Nketiah came up with 3.2. He's starting to get his detractors back again for no real reason, apart from he hasn't scored in 5, I think it is. He's in all the right areas. He's doing all the right things. But we're getting on his case again because that's some of the Arsenal fan base, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, we all know that there needs to be a scapegoat somewhere, doesn't there, with a lot of the fan base. Yeah. You know what? I've still... the fact that he's still getting in positions, he's still getting the chances. And, you know, I was having this debate with somebody on Twitter the other day. they were questioning his work rate, and you know, especially at Villa, and I don't think you can ever hold against him is his work rate. You know, he puts himself about, and I think he's obviously bulked up this year, and he's still putting the effort in, he's still getting into the right positions, and he just needs a goal. He just needs one to, I don't know, going off his arse or something, whatever. just needs that goal. I don't know whether you guys agree, but you know, the lack of competition, maybe does that maybe work against him, where he knows he's gonna, you know, I'm not saying he, it's almost like a subconscious, you know, there's no lack of threat to his position, really. He knows he's gonna play. It can work both ways. You know, he's had this run in the team because Jesus obviously picks up the injury, which works in his favour, because he knows he's going to play. He's got the manager's got confidence in him. But also, once that sort of wears off slightly, maybe the lack of competition, I don't know, I'm just speculating. You know, I still think he's doing well, and I still think, you know, physically, obviously we're going to get onto the Villa game, but you know, Tyrone Mings is a tough, you know, aggressive central defender, maybe not technically the best on the ball, but he's, you know what you're going to get with him. He's going to be all elbows. He's going to be all, you know, pushing you all over the place and physically imposing. And I still thought Eddie did well against him. And, you know, like, it impressed me, his work rate did, even though, you know, he missed that chance in the second half. But I just think he just needs a goal. He just, you know, like, obviously, CJ, you've played at a high level. Strikers just buzz off goals, don't they?
Confidence is a big thing, and Eddie's definitely a confidence player as well. I mean, it's tough for me, because I was saying before the game, I wanted to see Trossard start up front and put Martinelli on the left. And obviously, Martinelli got dropped. Eddie kept his position. I actually think Eddie's been good as well. I just feel like it's fine to rotate. And like you said, they're competition-wise. I think he knows he's going to be starting regardless. I think he misses Gabriel a little bit as well, because when him and Gabriel play together, they're sensational. I know I think I saw an interview as well, he likes playing those two together. But for me, I never said he was lazy, though. He just wasn't showing for the ball at times when we get onto Villa, but he wasn't lazy. He's never lazy. He presses. Most of his goals come from him working hard. So that argument, I think, is flawed if people are saying that. But again, it is a confidence thing. He does need a goal. I'll be honest, he has missed some chances that, as me as a striker, even I would admit they're criminal misses. I might not have got this one as well, which we're going to get to later. That's criminal in my opinion. But again, when there's no competition or no person to come in for you, you might have a little bit of like, oh, well, there'll be another one that comes up and I'm not going to be substituted. But he's doing all right. He definitely needs a goal. He's going to have naysayers. I don't care whatever he does. I think he'll have naysayers all the way till Jesus is back. I don't know what it is. It seems like I interview fans, and every time I speak with them, they're like, yeah, Eddie done well today. Even if he scored, he's done well today. But Jesus, it's like, come on, guys. Like, I hear it, but when he's doing, give him his flowers, man. Like, kids done. He's done so much. And he's a player in him, and he really worked hard in the summer. Really did, to prove a lot of people wrong. And I knew about that evidently as well. You can see in his physicality, the way he's changed and whatnot. But I do feel for them. I feel like, yeah, like you said, everyone always tries to find a scapegoat in Arsenal fan base. There's always one player, and I do feel for him. But a goal, hopefully this Saturday, gets Leicester kick him on.
People have got to consider his experience levels, haven't they? I mean, this is the first real bite of the cherry. This is the first real run in the team. John Gregory says, Nketiah getting slaughtered again all over various Arsenal forums. Give me him over the pair Aubameyang and Lacazette that we had last year every day of the week. And it's from perspectives. I can see what he's saying. But I do think Eddie gets himself in all those positions. And I agree with you, CJ. If he had just taken that little touch, there's been some shameful sort of misses where you would have thought he would have got onto it. But we're not beating him up on the podders. We still love you, Eddie. Just start sticking the goals in, for Christ's sake. Right, let's do these stats. Shots for Arsenal. We do Arsenal first and then Man City. 10 for Arsenal, 9 for City. One shot on target for us, 6 for them. 64% for us possession, 36 for them. 524 passes for us, 303 for them. 83% pass accuracy for us, 72% for them. Arsenal, at the end of the day, were naive in defence, weren't they? Can we pick a player for either side that shone out? Lauren, will come to you for Arsenal. Shall I kick us off?
Yeah, you go ahead. I'm trying to think back to it. I really, I buried it so deep.
Yeah, it seems to be Saka's every week. He just, he's always in the thick of it. He's always trying to create. He's got that lack of fear going forward. He's always trying to fashion something. And for them, I put De Bruyne. I mean, that goal was just such a class take. Just didn't even think about it. Boom, in the net. CJ, while Lauren's having a pop.
I mean, De Bruyne, our weak foot first time. I mean, even when he's not in the game, he's in the game. So you've got to give him credit there. He done well. Even for me, even like Haaland, I never, not that I didn't rate him. He's a great goal scorer. I was just like, I have to rate him. But I was just like, oh, is he going to be quiet in this game? And even when he's quiet, same like De Bruyne, he can pop up and move a bit of class and get his goal. That's what he does. So that side, yeah, De Bruyne or Haaland, Arsenal side, I mean, I could give Saka player the game every week, every to the end of the season. Yeah. Play, for me, I'm biased, I'll be honest. Anytime Saka comes into this conversation, I don't want to hear anything else, but he's the best. So it could be him, but also because I had my doubts about Jorginho, and he actually had an okay, he had a good first half actually in that game. He went a bit missing in the second half, but definitely in the first half, he was proving me wrong because I didn't love the signing when I first saw it, but he's proven me wrong. I think in the City first half, he was controlling, especially considering we only found out Partey wasn't in the squad moments before the kickoff. To step in when you know all the pressure is going to be on you, all the eyes will be on you, he didn't do too bad. So yeah, it's a Jorginho or Bukayo Saka there. But you're right, I'm trying to wrap my... I'm looking at my phone bill to my right, thinking like, I'm going back through the lineups. I'm like, oh, that game... I move on.
Yeah. Absolutely. Jay, who was yours?
Yeah, I mean, you've already really gone over them. I thought Grealish, as much as I hate to say it, because I hate his face and I hate he's direct and his dribbling's effective, isn't it? And he was the way he carries the ball, he draws fouls. He's in a bit of form. Yeah, he probably stood out just to be different from what's already been said. Yeah. I mean, from our lot, you know. I thought, yes, I'll go with Saka again, obviously, because he's just star boy, isn't he? So,
star boy.
Lauren, we'll save you going over the same ground. Let's have some talking points. Bernardo Silva was involved in a number of questionable fouls on Saka. Was the ref overly lenient? 45+2 saw him finally booked when he clattered into Arsenal's number 7 for the fourth time. I mean, you know, he's protesting his innocence. But the yellow card had been coming for some time. And I'm surprised that he didn't get another one, to be fair.
I mean, it's week in, week out on Saka, though, isn't it? I'm getting tired of watching it. And it's so crazy to me that it's the same tactic from every player, the same approach from every player. And every referee just turns a blind eye to it. I mean, there's no point in me going over this because we all know, we all are, I'm sure, of the same opinion. But you really have to just kind of sit there and wonder, like, What does a player have to do to get a card apart from repeated offences against Saka at this stage of the season, you know? And I think it was the Villa game actually, sorry, because he was going down. Was it the Villa game or the City game? Either way, he went down a few times and probably both matches.
Yeah, I thought he was coming off against Villa.
It was the Villa match, was it? Yeah. But I just thought, like I said before, I thought Silva looked completely out of place at that in that left back position. It was a weird choice on Pep's behalf, but yeah, it was our fault. We couldn't really capitalise it, and he turned to dirty tactics and got away with it, as players always do against Saka.
Well, there's some interesting things here. Sam Dean, this season, Saka has drawn one booking for every 10 fouls made on him, but he's received one yellow card for every 4.8 fouls he commits. And then Charles Watts just reported that Saka was awarded only 3 free kicks versus Villa, was kicked up and down for about 97 minutes. So that kind of puts it in. And there's a list here, and he's number 14. In the list of given fouls. So and at the top, it's Wilfried Zaha. No surprise there, is it?
No, not at all. Funny that, Paul. I actually went through a lot of those stats today. I did a live show at 5 and I was talking about that on my live. And Yeah, I think it was Sandine from the Telegraph actually wrote the article as well about it, about the players are starting to realise that he's being targeted, and at elite level, clubs do that. They will target the best player and try and rattle him. Saka's not one to be rattled mentally. He'll get up and go again. But when they get booked, they share the fouls, and I find that it's a cheat. It's a cheating tactic. They share the fouls amongst the other teammates, so they don't all get they don't get a red card. And I hate to see it. And I read that there, and he got fouled 3 times against Villa, and he made no fouls, but ends up with a booking. And that's because that's, I think that's the first time I've seen him actually react to what happened at Villa. I've never seen him lose his head like that. But he was hurt. I'm telling you, but in the stat, I thought he was off, and he was evidently hurt. He was limping for a lot of it. I don't know if the cameras were picking up, but he didn't want to play. He received the ball, and I could see him injured and pass it straight back instead of trying to beat the man. He had to overcome that injury on his Achilles. But fair play to him, because he does, and he does it. He does it for the team, and that's why he's a star boy. But it needs to be cracked down on, because it annoys me so much.
Jay, what did we make of the De Bruyne shove on Mr. Arteta? I love a bit of spice on the side.
Oh, I don't know.
Mikel just does these little things. I'm sure it's to wind people up, and he picked on the right player there, didn't he? But strangely enough, no one had a word with Mr. De Bruyne. The other thing I wanted to say is about Arsenal, Manchester City have been charged by the Football Association. We must be used to it now, mustn't we? We must have a regular slot for failing to control their players. Now, it might not be, but I saw 10 City players to Arsenal's 2 round the referee. Was I making it up? Was I like looking through rose-coloured glasses, Lauren?
Oh, you're spot on.
You definitely saw it right, and it's just, it's a joke at this stage, really, isn't it? I mean, if you don't laugh, you're going to cry, so you just have to look at the funny side of it, I suppose, and, you know.
Well, even analysts are getting involved now. We're having data scraps, which is really
good. Yeah, I heard about that. I just don't know what these lot are doing, I'll be honest. Like, the FA charges, they're not drawing the lines on the VAR of, like, what? It's actually, it's a bad thing. It's crazy. And I don't like to talk about other people's jobs because I hate what people do sometimes do it to me. But it's just like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Like, it's so obvious. But anyway, listen.
Right, let's move on to that Villa game, the thriller at the Villa. A must-win game to peg back City. Unai Emery and grumbling Emi Martinez and our former transfer target as well, Emi Buendia. Plenty of pre-match spice. Thoughts going into the game, Jay? Were you happy that this one was on the knife edge going into it?
I don't know about you lot, but you know, when we're in these little spells of sort of dips in form or bad results, I can't always envisage where the next win's coming from. I know it's stupid, but and I know we're obviously going to win games, but it's like, God, I don't think I'm going to win here. And then I'm like, I don't think I'm going to beat Leicester. And then it's just like, where's the next win coming from? And it's Emery, and you know, like, oh, you know, Villa, they've got a good. I convince myself they're a better team than they are. Because we were driving back from the airport, and on the radio they were saying that Villa had made 5 changes from the team, and I think 4 of those or 3 of those were in defence. So I thought, you know what, that's decent. That's proper Emery. That, you know, like, just chaos. That sort of. Chain mass changes, which I thought that could work in our favour, and obviously Thomas Partey wasn't available again. But yeah, just my thought pattern was, we're never going to win a game again. I know it's stupid, but and you know, the first half was pretty rough. You know, we weren't at it. We were slow. Our passing was slow. Decision making was slow. I thought our approach play. You know, I thought Trossard was picking up a few decent positions, and our approach play getting to the edge of the box was kind of all right, but we weren't getting anywhere, and we were making mistakes. And then obviously every chance that Villa had was going in, and it was just like, oh, you know, like, this, we're just still in that rut. And I'm sure we'll get onto the goals. All in all, you know, like, that first half just wasn't good enough, was it? And it was, I did not see that second half coming at all.
That was probably one of the best second halves of football I've seen this season. I didn't know what to do with myself, I've got to be honest. At 2-2, I mean, I was kind of, I take that now, because it's a tough gig going there. But obviously, I wanted the win as well. And then when we started cranking it up, I felt sick. I couldn't sit still. It was an absolute nightmare. But let's get on to it. Let's have a look through that team. 4-3-3 again. Aaron Ramsdale, Zinchenko, Gabriel, William Saliba, Ben White, Granit Xhaka, Jorginho, Martin the God, Odegaard, Trossard, Nketiah and Bukayo Saka. Vulnerable in defence again, CJ. We made hard work of it, didn't we?
Yeah, it wasn't a game for the faint-hearted, let me tell you that. I mean, oh.
Changed my trousers twice.
Honestly, it was crazy. The thing is, right, we did previews, obviously, at Villa Park. I got AFTV, I got the guys access into the stadium. And we were speaking to the staff, and a lot of them Villa fans, they said, you all win this. And I was like, oh, I don't know. I do what you did there, Jay. I'm exactly the same. I took myself into making the team better than they are. And I even saw Tyrone Mings. We went and spoke with him, and I went with one of my friends, and he was just like, I'm injured. Like, I'm not 100% fit. So I need to get fit before I play you guys. And then he played the full night and played a really good game. And I was like, I don't know if he's lying, if he's taking a piss. But, and then I found out he actually was injured. Ollie told me, and he was like, yeah, he was, but he ended up playing for it. But it was a game just of stress. And honestly, if you heard some of the things in the stands when the chances that were missed were missed, I was like, it's not going to be our day. I've been here before. And then, yeah, what a game though in the end. Thank God, obviously, got over the line. But I don't know what it is. Like, yeah, you don't know who you're going to beat. And you don't know, like Jay said, I had the same thing. Like, when's the next win going to come from? And I'm just like, I said to Robbie as well, I said, like, if we don't win today, this is before the game, I said, that's it for the title hopes. I know there's a lot of games left, but I just was in my mind. I was like,
yeah.
I can't keep doing this. My heart, I'm all over the place. I'm a mess. So I was just like, whatever. And then at 2-2, I was just thinking, either a draw for me is still, I'm in that mood. And then obviously things changed and it ended up being a great day.
I did see the pictures of you there. So I saw it on one of the social media things. It was just a crazy match. I bet the atmosphere was cracking, and the Arsenal away fans, they still let their presence be felt, don't they? They're always up there. They're always vocal. Doesn't matter whether we're behind or we're in front. It's amazing. Lauren, the first goal, Ollie Watkins, superb goal down that left-hand side. Saliba could have had a nibble earlier, but we won't give him too much flack for that. But it was well taken, wasn't it? Ramsdale didn't have much of a chance.
It was very well taken, and we just looked as though we hadn't really started yet, if you know what I mean. Like, the player, it was so disorganized. Like, what, thinking back to it now, our defense was so all over the place, and
it's been a feature of recent games, isn't it? We're not as tight as we were.
It has, for sure. And you know, obviously when we're scoring the goals at the other end, you know, it's fine. We can concede one or two, or you know, we have Ramsdale there, who's a phenomenal shot stopper. But whatever it was on the day, you know, I mean, Villa are a good team, let's be real. But just as I think one of the lads said it there, every time they got the ball in the box, it looked like it was going in. It was just one of those days where they were on it and we really weren't. But yeah, it was a really disappointing goal to concede so early on. And I think, I mean, obviously I can't get in the heads of the players, but as a fan, I was sitting there going, oh God, here we go again. It's all, like I said, it's all over. You know, I think we must all be so deeply traumatized, guys. Maybe we need to talk about this with someone professionally. I'm not sure, but strength in numbers. I'm just delighted everyone's the same.
With recent results, the last team I wanted to see was Unai Emery's Aston Villa. I think, was it Bill Shankly said that winning is a habit and losing becomes a habit as well. And we didn't want any of that. Right then, Bukayo Saka's goal, Jay, marvel at that. I mean, it just was a peach, wasn't it? Pulled back, bosh.
That is a difficult finish. You know, he's got what, three or four players in front of him. The ball's still rising when it hits the net. It kind of looks like it's a little bit behind him as well. And his technique's so good. And how many times has he bailed us out, or has he got won us the game? And he's just so consistent. And he's obviously like CJ alluded to, he was getting kicked and he had that little scuffle with Coutinho and Luis. And I loved Saliba coming in straight away and backing him up, because it wasn't that long ago that kind of thing didn't happen in our squad. You know, there's definitely that togetherness. And I think in the build-up, I think, was it Jorginho did quite well on the edge of the box, used the ball well, played it down the line to Ben White, crossed it in. And yeah, like I said, I mean, I was watching it on my phone because we were still driving back, and it kind of, I don't know, obviously CJ, you were in the away end, but it was such a good finish. It was, and I shouldn't be surprised because it's obviously Saka, but it kind of surprised me that he still managed to be technically that good to find the back of the net. Because yeah. I mean, first and foremost, he could have missed the target. Secondly, there were about three or four players in front of him. So great finish, unbelievable goal. Really, one of our goals of the season, no doubt for me.
Well, plus Martinez takes up three quarters of the goal, doesn't he? He's a big old lump.
Yeah. So I mean, I love that finish. Just the fact as well, it was just looked like it was slightly behind him as well. And I mean, again, Saka runs off. Love the celebration, you know, tribute to Thierry. So yeah,
Brett, yeah, it's all over social media today, hanging off the flag. Yeah, I love that.
It is on. They should have got it. I mean, he should have got it, but it is what it is. I'm not going
to. Well, when we're criticising him for he can't get hold of the pole enough, but yeah, it's nothing much, is it? So they got back into it. Then they Coutinho scored. I mean, of all the players, you wouldn't expect him to score. I mean, when was the last time he scored? I think. We've had about three prime ministers since then, haven't we? CJ, walk us through Zinchenko's goal. Another peach. I mean, we were just rattling up all these peach of a strike, but until we got to Jorginho's. But this was a hell of a hit, wasn't it?
Yeah, do you know what? I criticised Arsenal a bit for their corner taking of recent times. Trossard took some against, I think, City. Couldn't beat the first man. Fabio Vieira at the end of the game on one of the games took the worst free kick into the box at the last minute, last cross, and I was pulling my hair out. So, like, there was definitely an issue there. So when I saw this corner set up, I was like, oh, I could see Zinchenko free. And I was like, I don't think they're going to cross it into the box. And James was next to me from AFTV, and he was like, oh, why? And then they played it. And I was like, look, see. And then they went short and they'd done it. And he had so much space, took the strike. Even though he had so much space, there was a lot of bodies that had to go through that ball, and fair play to him because it was redemption really as well for him. You can see in his celebrations, well, head back down, straight back to the line. He wanted to get going. He could feel the momentum was changing. So quality, model professional Zinchenko when it came to that. Great strike of the ball, great finish, a hard technique to do as well, by the way.
Yeah, because he had to keep it low, didn't he?
Low,
he had
exactly.
to keep it really on the floor.
Exactly that. And then we had other corners, which I think they should have done the same. They didn't. They ended up changing up their what they were going to do. But there was many a times where they could have went back to Zinchenko and done the same thing. But listen, it happened once. It worked. I'm happy we won the game in the end. But yeah, it was a great finish from him. And it was needed. Let me tell you that.
Yeah, I bet while you were there. Lauren, obviously, Nketiah, he had a handful of chances. Odegaard, I mean, if I was going to have £1,000 on a player to score in that position at that time, with a left foot strike, have to be Martin Odegaard, surely.
Yeah, it was. If a player of his quality is missing a chance like that, you automatically think, okay, we're not winning this game. It's going to end a draw.
If a player of our quality was missing that, we could have scored that. I hate when people say that.
I haven't got a left foot.
Me neither.
All right, but if it was my left.
I'll put money on your butt. You're going to take a touch. You're right.
Yeah, but it was definitely one of those pinch me moments. And I think, you know, the look of disgust on his face himself, you know. And I think if we're talking about people who hold themselves to a high standard, I think Martin Odegaard is probably the most professional, you know, to the point, to the book. Everything he does is perfection. And you could see by himself, he was horrified by the chance he'd missed. And, you know, we can laugh about it now. It's great. It's funny. But it definitely hurt at the time. And, you know, at that point in time, I was really thinking, you know, if we're not putting these chances away time and time again, you know, we had Nketiah in this match and the match previous to this. And I thought Nketiah did very, very well to create that chance to get the ball across to him. And, you know, it was a perfect assist. It just missed the finish, but you know, in the end of the day, it didn't matter, and we can laugh about it now, which is the main thing.
Well, at the time, I was beside myself. I wasn't talking to anyone. I was just in a foul mood. Then second half, obviously, we got a lot better, didn't we? As we said, then Jorginho paid off his £12 million tab with a goal that capped, for me, a really good performance. You could see why Arteta and Edu went out and got him, because I thought he was really solid. He was composed, breaking up play, turning over the ball with some top, top passes. Jay, will this silence the mob?
No, I don't think so, because like I said before,
me
I think,
neither.
I think with Jorginho, ultimately he's going to get judged by someone, you know, his lack of pace and like in his potentially, you know, he's Thomas Partey's, like, his physicality is obviously so huge to, and he's Thomas Partey ultimately is such a massive part of us, you know, like Jorginho, different player. I was like, and I think you mentioned it earlier, CJ, I was the same as you, mate. I didn't particularly like the player at Chelsea, and I can understand the signing. It makes perfect sense. And I thought he was really good on, and he's been really good since he's come in, really. I thought he did all right at Everton as well. But it won't silence the naysayers, but what a great, you know, technically how he executed that shot, you know, like let the ball run across him and the first time. It was a bit of a shame it didn't hit the underside of the bar and go in, so he got the full, you know, the accolades for the goal. But great effort and great celebration. It must have been mental in that away. And you know, when he ran towards you, like, oh God, I'd have given anything to be in there. Must have been crazy.
I'm going to have to get a better internet connection, I think. I'm doing some sort of Max Headroom thing for anyone who remembers Max Headroom. Just sort of stalling and going on that. Anyway, let's talk about I did celebrate twice, really. Jorginho's goal went in, but the best thing was it went in the back of the net from the head of Martinez, who, I tell you, he's just wound me up. Yeah, ever since he's left Arsenal, he's been slagging us off and all the rest of it. And his World Cup performance, the taunting and all that sort of thing. He deserved these two, didn't he? When he went up for the free kick or corner or whatever it was. And I was enjoying mocking him, to be honest. How was it for you, Lauren?
Great. I enjoyed every second of it.
Is it just me being mean about an ex-player?
No, because, no. Absolutely not.
He just stumped the place out in the end.
Strange guy.
Very weird. You know, obviously it is disappointing. We couldn't give Jorginho, you know, the credit for the goal. That will go in the history books anyway, and we'll always remember that moment. He was the one who put out on the bar to hit the back of Martinez's head. We'll take it. You know, I'm sure even he enjoyed it a bit as well. So it was a crazy goal. And, you know, the 93rd minute, we looked like we'd done everything we could do. How many times have we seen those games before? Even this season, there's games where we just think if we played for another 5-10 minutes, this game would be ours. We'd have those 3 points. And it really looked as though the time was slipping. But, you know, we had those extra 6 minutes thanks to his wonderful time wasting. So, you know, you got to take what you get, and that's it. That's it.
Karma is a bitch.
Absolutely.
There's a reason as well, isn't there, CJ, that he didn't become our number one. I mean, Leno, let's give Leno some credit. All the tough times he went through when he was replaced by Ramsdale, he kept quiet and just kept working. Martinez, he had his chance. There was obviously something in his locker that Arteta didn't really like, and I think that came to the fore. That's why we flogged him.
Well, this with the Martinez thing, it's been so. I didn't like him when he left Arsenal for his comments on what he was doing. I didn't enjoy that at all. I know keepers and GK Union, the goalkeeper union, they're a bit weird anyway. I know that. I have many football friends that are goalkeepers, and they're a bit crazy. But I was kind of used to it, and I was like, do you know what? Cool. He's just one of those guys. I'll ignore it. But I wasn't really ever a fan of him. But then I went to Argentina for the World Cup. And they lured him up in a whole nother level. Like, I learned a lot about him as well, and where he came from and his route. And I was like, oh, I got a bit of more respect for him. And fair play, Martinez. You know, I'm starting to like you a bit more. And then we got to the game. And I said, nope, you're still that big old so it was very sweet seeing that happened. And do you know what makes it even sweeter? Listen, what I get to do is a dream of what I get to do today. And I always try and remain humble, be very thankful for it. And I feel like being humble is something you've got to take throughout your whole life. And Martinez went up for that corner without his manager's permission. He just went up to it by himself, maybe because I don't know. For me, that's a bit of arrogance to say, you know, maybe a World Cup winner, or I can do what I want. And and his manager wasn't happy with it. And that's, you should never really, you shouldn't have done it. It wasn't your manager's decision. So again, but it made it even sweeter for when we scored. But I think that's a big, I think you just take a big lesson from that game in complete, because like, I think Aaron Ramsdale, yes, he has a lot of shithousery. I love it because we're a fan of him. He's for our club. But he doesn't take it as far as Martinez, in my opinion. And I just think you've got to learn from how you were in that game against Arsenal. And again, karma is a big old B, and it came round to bite him. And yeah, it was sweet.
While you mentioned being out of the World Cup there, what about that picture of yours I saw online? There you were with all the top flight Arsenal bods. I bet that's in your house somewhere, isn't it? Everyone was there. Edu, Arteta. Was Josh Kroenke there? He was, wasn't he?
Yeah, Josh and Stan and Tim Lewis.
I haven't got that picture, have you, Jay, behind you? Hey? he's got loads of pictures with all the Arsenal players. That would be one to have, though.
I'll be honest, whatever I say about that time, no one believes me, or they think it's like, it doesn't make sense. I can't describe it.
Photoshop.
Literally, because that's what people believed it was. But I was in a bar and they stepped in. It's the most undescribable moment in my life. I was literally shaking. Obviously, I spoke about Eddie. We had a relationship before, so that was fine. But meeting Stan in person was surreal, and Josh and then Arteta. And it's a weird one. It's something that will stay with me forever. It is printed out. I've just bought a house, actually, and it's going to be the main thing you see when you walk through the door, as much as my missus doesn't want it to be. It's going to be, because it's a big moment. And
I'd have it like Zinchenko's gym just on the back wall there.
Yeah. That's amazing with the Arsenal memorabilia. That's what I'm saying. These are things that, like, I'll tell my kids about eventually, and it was surreal. But it's not about me. I will hold with me, but it's about the bigger picture and bringing fans and people.
But it's a great moment. I mean, you know, when you meet the Arsenal hierarchy or ex-players or whatever, it's always a great moment. Now, let's talk about, Lauren, the celebration of Martinelli when Mr. Martinez got caught cold up the other end. It went AWOL without permission. And then we've got that little celebration. It came in for a lot of stick. Gabby Abonglahor said it was disrespectful, but we don't really care about that. But what's your opinion on that?
Just to mention that goal, I thought Vieira did absolutely exceptional.
It was a great pass.
I've watched that clip, I'd say, honestly, I'm not going to lie, about 300 times since the weekend. Everything about it was, just today alone. Everything about it was exceptional. The way he was able to draw that defender out a bit, create that space for Martinelli, who, let's be real, has had quite a lot of stick over the past few weeks. So in my opinion, the celebration was more than deserved. He got his goal, got his confidence back, 4-2, made it sound a lot more relaxed than the game actually was. You know, how many times are you going to be in the 96th minute of a Premier League game with an open goal in front of you? Let the boy celebrate. More than deserved. You're all celebrating, I think.
That's only ever happened to me once, and not at your level, CJ. It was just that we were over at Southwark Park in South London, and the ball came out, and I was bombing up the pitch. And there was no one behind me. And mine was even cheekier, because it got to the line and I got down on my hands and knees and just rolled it in with my head. Right, let's do some stats for that game. We do Aston Villa first, 7 shots to Arsenal's 20. 5 shots on target for them, 5 for us. 33% possession for them, 67% for us. 293 passes as opposed to our 571, 76% pass accuracy to our 85%. So who was your player of the match? Lauren, don't try and bottle it this time.
No, this one's easy. Don't worry, this one's easy. I'm going to have to give it to Jorginho. I think, you know, if we think back to November, December, Thomas Partey's out, almost inevitably those 3 points are going, regardless of the form that we were in. He is so vital to our team. We've said this time and time again. To have somebody that's a proven Premier League quality player come in, and to, you know, he's not going to emulate everything that Partey does, but to play that role well, and again, I don't want to criticise Lokonga or anything, but, you know, to have a proven quality player who can come in and who can fill that role when Partey's not there, which he inevitably will be. We know his injury record. That's what we all anticipated in this kind of run up in the season. And, you know, he's done it. He's getting goals as well. You know, he's doing more than I think any of us anticipated he would. So not just for the match, but for everything he's brought since he's signed for the club, I'm going to give it to him.
CJ?
Ooh, is this is again, we've done a two that we did at Man City because it'd be for me, Jorginho, which is a bit boring, but it's the truth. I mean, obviously, Lauren gave it to Jorginho, and I think that's 100% fair. J20, not J2O, which I used to call him because I wasn't happy with signing, but no, J20, I think he deserves that. But Bukayo Saka for me, only because, well, like I said, every time his name gets mentioned, I'm going to choose him. But no, on top of that, he. Riding those challenges, being injured because he was 100% injured and playing through it and still coming up with that sort of performance. For me, Bukayo Saka, I think he's been phenomenal. But I have to give an honorary mention to Ramsdale because that save. Oh, my days. I didn't realise. I don't think anyone realised he got a hand to it in the ground because we just thought he hit the crossbar. But what a hand he got to it. And I have to give him a shout because... That keeps you in the game. That was a key moment. And he's had many of those throughout the season. But yeah, Bukayo Saka's my man of the match. Sorry, Jay, we've stolen all the good ones. But
yeah. Any options for you, Jay, left?
I thought Odegaard had a really good second half. That miss aside, I thought he was class. I thought Gabriel did well in that second half as well. He did that one. He had that one block. You know, that sort of stuck his leg out at the last minute and made that block in the second half. Yeah, just to be different. I mean, I probably would have gone with Saka as well because he was superb. But Odegaard, I mean, they all massively stepped up the second half, didn't they? They had
I think Odegaard got annoyed with that miss and his game sort of progressed from that point, didn't it?
He really stepped up. He was having a great, you know, he had a superb second half. They obviously had a massive kick up the arse, didn't they, at half-time by Arteta. And they came out and the effort was just, it was a completely different, you know, the passing was much quicker and Odegaard was at the centre of all that. So I'll give it Odegaard.
Right, okay. A couple of bits to wrap it up. Leicester is next for the guys on the 25th, and we've got the WSL Liverpool, March the 8th. Let's have a look at the Leicester game first. You might want to cover your ears, Stacey. It's all right. Jay's missus is a Leicester fan, so they go to the games together as well. So it makes an interesting combo there, CJ, if you want.
Oh, that's...
that'll be a good one. What's your thoughts on the game, Jay?
They've not
had a great season. It's been very patchy, hasn't it?
Yeah. I think we should go into it full of confidence. I thought Leicester did all right against United. I thought in the first half, we've all seen that Sabitzer tackle on the central defender from Leicester and clear red card. If that's a red card, it's a different game. And Harvey Barnes had that chance, didn't he, at Old Trafford, one-on-one, and De Gea makes a great save and they have a couple of other chances. And obviously United got Rashford, who punished him. On another day, Leicester would have beat him. And I think, you know, losing a game when you put in so much effort and have so many chances, I think it really can take it out of you. And I think we've got the opposite of that. We've got a sort of a late winner where, I mean, what has that done for our season, that result at Villa Park? What's it done for our team, you know, morale and team spirit, and to win in such a way late on? I think we can go into it full of confidence. And it's a tough game, don't get me wrong. It's a tough atmosphere in there sometimes. But I think if we can start like we have most of the games this season, on the front foot, full of quick tempo and good passing, you know, crisp passing, I think we can come away with a win and maybe... 2-0, maybe?
That's what I predicted.
Yeah, same here. I was going to go 2-0. Yeah, Lauren, we won't put you under pressure because we know you hate that bit. Lauren, let's ask you about WSL with Liverpool. What do you think the result's going to be there? We desperately need to keep up the pressure, don't we? We've slipped a bit.
We'll have to, absolutely. So this will be after the international break, which is going on at the moment. I think England are playing tomorrow night. And the last, it's kind of like a mini tournament they have going on at the moment. So, you know, a lot of players are traveling, you know, players in Australia, we have players all over more or less. Yeah, it's going to be a tough one, but I think, you know, this is newly promoted Liverpool. You know, they've managed to get results against Chelsea already this season, but that was very early on. We need to get a win. Otherwise, you know, it's kind of the nail in the coffin for any chance of absolutely not even for the titles at this point. You know, our challenge for European football next season is looking a little bit dim, but anyway, we'll stay positive, we'll stay hopeful. So I have faith that the girls will pull a win from that game.
Thanks to the guys. Thanks for you, Podders, for tuning in. I'll try and get rid of the pyrotechnics next time because we've been working on that for about 3 weeks. Jay, CJ and Lauren, thanks very much for joining me. And we'll see you soon.
Take care.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Now, Jermaine Pennant and Robert Pires, 2003 against Southampton. Arsenal won 6-1 against Southampton in the Premier League on May the 7th, 2003. Robert Pires opened the scoring in the 9th minute. Jermaine Pennant scored 2 goals in the 16th and 19th minute to hand home side a comfortable 3-0 lead within 20 minutes. Pires scored again in the 23rd minute, while Pennant completed his hat-trick in the 26th minute. Pires completed his hat-trick in the second half. This was the first time two players in the same team had scored a hat-trick in the Premier League. The final score was 6-1 in favour of Arsenal.
Odegaard! Odegaard! He's the captain of the Arsenal and they call him Odegaard. Odegaard! Odegaard! He's the captain of the Arsenal and they call him Odegaard!
Now, the most feared goalkeeper in history. Got any ideas? Well, he stood at just over 6'1" tall. He was German. He was undeniably talented. He twice claimed the record for the longest period without conceding a goal in the Bundesliga during a 21-year trophy-laden career. He became the only goalkeeper in history to win the Golden Ball Award. But he was a bit saucy, grabbing around the neck, head-to-head, trying to bite players' faces, face-pushing, shoving teammates. It is, of course, Oliver Kahn. Not only that, he was mean. Oliver Kahn once played in a penalty shootout against a group of 9-year-olds. For every penalty scored by the kids, money was pledged to be given to charity. Kahn saved every penalty. Oh, that's mean. Check out the compilation of The Wrath of Kahn. Just type in Kahn the compilation on thesportsbible.com. The podcast is presented by Manscaped at manscaped.com and we're offering a 20% discount with an exclusive code for the Performance Package 4.0 Luxury Grooming Kit. This includes the Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer for a precise shave, the Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, Crop Preserver ball deodorant, Crop Reviver toner and 3 boxer shorts and a travel bag to hold your goodies. Order your Performance Package 4.0 from manscaped.com and apply the code ARS03. That's ARS03. My thanks to Silent Dave. You can find him on Twitter as SilentDave101. That's also the home of Jay, who you can look up as the Ball Gooner. Paul is at PMATCAP, Lauren is at LaurenD27010, and Tom is ThomasAnastasi3. The podcast is on most social media outlets, including Facebook, Twitter and TikTok. Shout-outs to Brandon Murphy, Dave Miller of Arsenal Attic, Simon Deasy of Gunners for Life, which is twin to the podcast. And while you're there, check out Arse Devils for the latest news and opinion on Arsenal. Please like and follow this audio version of the podcast and subscribe to the YouTube version of the show. Want to say hi, ask a question or take part in the show? It's an Arsenal Thing 4 at gmail.com. A big thank you to all of you for your support, whether you watch or listen. Until next time, look after yourselves and each other. And finally, remember this, North London is most definitely red.
have to ride it tonight.